Third is at-tariku. The third is at-tariku lidinihi al-mufariqu lil-jama'ah. So the third scenario in which it is permissible for the life, for a life of the Muslim to be taken, is when he abandons his deen. He abandons his deen and he separates from the, or separates from the jama'ah. So this is when a person, he disbelieves in Allah, disbelieves in Islam, or according to some scholars, he refuses to establish the salah, because tariqus salah, the one who abandons the salah, then this is kufr in the view of many scholars. So if he, or he falls into any other type of disbelief, kufr. So in this case, there is a procedure for this, and there is a had, well-known had for this. And so this is one of those affairs for which many of the, you know, munafiqoon, the hypocrites, the kuffar, you know, the disbelievers and the apostates and people like them, the murtaddoon, they take issue with this particular ruling in Islam, this issue of the ruling on apostasy. So in order to address this very briefly in a number of points, we should first of all mention that it is simply a fact of life, whether you like it or not, it's a fact of life that anywhere where there is a concentration of power, a government, you know, any type of concentration of power, that those people, in order to protect their interests, they will engage in killing their subjects, right? So we are saying this as a fact of life, right? We're not speaking here in terms of right or wrong. We are speaking as a fundamental fact of human nature, right? So all nations, in every single nation, pretty much from history, right, where anyone feels there is a threat to their power, they will actually assassinate or kill or whatever means they have, they will engage in killing people, right? Because they are a threat to their interests, or they are a threat to the society, or they are a threat to the power of the government, or they are a threat to the goals and objectives, right? This is just a fundamental fact of life. And so even now, in the modern era, if we just look and analyze the different nations, we will see, for example, that some nations, they are very open, like, for example, the communists of China. Right? The communists of China, they are probably ranking in the highest of nations who actually kill the number of people. So they are very clear that they openly, you know, kill their subjects for things such as, you know, working against the state or undermining the stability of the state. So they're very loosely defined crimes for which you can be, you know, get the death penalty, right? So this is an example where a nation is very open and clear that if you work against the state, then you'll get the death penalty, right? This is one example as to how it's done. A second example is a more indirect example would be, for example, somewhere like Russia, where politicians can just fall dead, you know, maybe 2 or 3 dozen can just fall dead. And obviously, this is sending an indirect message to people that, you know, if you mess with the state, then, you know, you will be taken out. So it's not like direct, it's not saying directly, but it's a very indirect method that politicians who are kind of, you know, working against the interests of the state or the government, then they might end up just, you know, accidentally falling dead by a straight bullet or something. So this is another method where a nation will, you know, kind of indirectly give the message to its people. It won't be direct, it'll be very indirect, but they're making it clear that, look, this is a message that we're sending to you, that if you work against the state, then, you know, you will end up like this. The third manifestation that you see of people doing the same thing, so we've got the communists, like the Chinese, very clear and very open. They're not hiding anything. Then you have like what you see, for example, in Russia, for example, where politicians will drop dead, and this is like indirectly sending a message. They're not being open, but it's very indirect, but they are sending the message. The third one is when nations, they will make it appear like an accident, even though, you know, we know we're not stupid and people are not stupid. We know that this death was very, very suspicious. So, for example, if a nation wants to go to war and there's some individual who's getting in the way of that war because he's telling you that, hang on, we haven't found any weapons of mass destruction anywhere in that nation. They are nowhere to be found. Right, and so this one individual, this weapons inspector, is getting in the way of a pre-planned invasion and a war of another nation, like Iraq, for example, right? Then this man might end up, you know, committing suicide for some reason, right? So some nations don't do it directly, they do it indirectly, and they make it look like as if it was a suicide, right? So, or for example, if there's a royalty, a member of royalty, who, you know, is dating some Arab person and who might just end up marrying that Arab person, right? Some princess, for example, right? And so how would this look now that some princess royalty has just married some, you know, some camel-riding Arab from the desert in Egypt somewhere? How would this look? And millions of impressionable women might actually become inclined towards Islam and this new lifestyle of this princess, because she just married an Arab Muslim, as sinful as he might be, right? So lo and behold, you know, such a person might just end up dying in a car accident, right? So these kind of things. So you have some people who are very smart and clever in the way they will murder people, right? So the Chinese communists, very open, very clear. You work against the state, then we will take you out. You'll get the death penalty. Russian model, we'll send you a message by dropping politicians if you work against the state. And then we have the likes of the Western European, who are very, you know, very deceptive, very cunning. And so they will make it look as if it's a completely accidental. So the point that we're making from all of this is, whether you like it or not, nations will take the lives of their subjects, whether they are kings, prime ministers, artists who've become very powerful and have a lot of people listening to them, and they might start giving the wrong message, right? Because artists gain a lot of power as well, right? Musicians, artists, they have a lot of people listen to them, so they could be even sending the wrong message. They could end up being, you know, falling dead. So the point that we're making is, we are speaking about this issue of ridda, apostasy in Islam, and we're trying to explain this issue. And so the first point that we mentioned is that whether you like it or not, it is a fundamental fact of human nature that when people gain power, they will murder other people in order to protect their interests or the interests of the state. Right, that's point number one. And there are different models as to how this takes place. You have the Chinese communists, you have like the Russian type of model, then you have the, you know, the very sneaky, slimy Western European type of model, where it looks completely like an accident and you would never know. The second point is that these nations also have laws of treason. There are laws of treason which still apply in many of these nations for which you will be given the death penalty. From those, some of them very loosely, if you look into the law, for example, you will find that, you know, waging war against royalty or, let's mention some of them, for example, if you commit adultery with the ruling, you know, with the sovereign, with any of his like family members, if you commit adultery, this is now treason, or with the wife
of the heir to the throne, right? So the one who will take the throne afterwards if you sleep with this. So there's many of these things that are still present in the law and treated as high treason. If you plot the murder of the sovereign, if you commit adultery with the sovereign's, like, you know, wives or things like that, or with his eldest unmarried daughter, right? All of these things are still enshrined in law. So many of these nations actually have a law of treason, right? There is a law which, in Islam, it is treated as the law of ridda. But they have what they call the law of treason, which is when you work against the interests of the state or of the sovereign, the ruler, right? These laws still exist. That's basically the second point. Right. Now, the third point is that the law of ridda in Islam is because that person is waging a war against the state by way of his ridda. Right? It is undermining the foundation of the state. Now, Islam, because there is a worldly life and the hereafter, there's a hereafter, right? So basically, this life is only temporary, and there is a permanent life in the hereafter. So when someone comes along and undermines the foundation of that state, which is Islam and Tawheed, and, you know, all of which is a springboard for the hereafter, right? Eternal life in the hereafter. When someone comes along and undermines the foundation of that state, they are basically waging a war against that state, because the state itself is founded upon, as we said, this life and the hereafter. So this is different to all other states. All other states, they are based upon secularism or materialism. It's just this life and nothing else, right? So you cannot compare between the two, right? In Islam, there is a hereafter. So therefore, when a person becomes a murtad, he has essentially waged a war against the very foundation of the state. He's waging a war against every single individual in that state, because by way of his ridda, he is inviting those people, right, to the same, to something of its like. And that means that those people, their welfare in the hereafter is in jeopardy. So basically, you are becoming a caller to hellfire for all of those people, right? So this is essentially waging a war against the state, but in a way different to how it would be in secular materialist states. So what this then leads us to is really the issue of, we've already made it clear that nations and powers are going to kill people anyway. They're going to murder people who are going to jeopardize the interests of the state. This happens in any case, right? But as for whether it is right or wrong, then in Islam this comes down to whether the hereafter is true or not. Tawheed is true or not. Messengership is true or not. Right? So do you understand? It's not an issue about the actual taking of life. It's not to do with that anymore. It's to do with what is the basis upon which it is taken. Is that right or is it wrong? Right? So basically, as we said, if there is a paradise, if there is a hellfire, if the messengers are true, revealed books are true, Tawheed is the truth for which this creation is created, if all of that is true, then it follows that the had of ridda is perfect justice. Right? It's got nothing to do with the actual had itself. That becomes irrelevant, right? Because we've already established that it's a fundamental fact of human nature that they will take people's lives in order to protect their power, protect their interests, and whatever. We've already established that. So when it comes to discussing this issue of the had of ridda, which is the had of apostasy, then, as we said, this is one of the issues that many of the munafiqun, the hypocrites, the apostates, the disbelievers, they use it, and they use it to basically undermine the belief of Muslims and to confuse them and to misguide them and to, you know, and so on and so forth. So these points that we've mentioned should help us to understand this particular issue, that this applies only to a Muslim and nobody else. If, for example, a Jew became a Christian, or a Christian became a Jew, or a Jew became a Hindu, or a Christian became a Buddhist, right? This, you know, and they were living under the rule of Islam, then it wouldn't apply to them. It doesn't apply to them at all. But if a Muslim abandons his deen, right, this now is waging a war against the very foundation of the state. You are undermining the foundation of the state itself. Right? You are announcing an open war. Why? Because, as we said before, the foundation of a state in Islam is not like any other secular materialist types of nations and the state which is built upon top of that. So he's basically undermining the welfare of every person. Why? Because upon Tawheed, upon the justice of Tawheed, are many other manifestations of justice. Right? So all of the dealings between the people, they emanate from Tawheed. All of the particular laws to do with inheritance, to do with crime, to do with, you know, the mutual dealings, everything emanates from Tawheed itself. So if you come out in rejection of that, then you are basically waging a war against every aspect and every element of a Muslim society. And finally, the final point is that if you think about it, if a person values his life more than the, you know, his choice of belief, then he would conceal his disbelief and just operate as a hypocrite, right? If his life was more important to him, knowing what the outcome would be, then he would just simply operate as a hypocrite, right? Why would he jeopardize his life if it's more important to him, right? This shows that when a person comes out and announces his kufr, and then obviously there is also a due process as well, because then, you know, you go to a judge, and there's advice, and there's admonition, and there's refuting his argument, and he's given a period of time, right? So this shows the person who persists through all of this, and he's willing to give his life. This means that he is intending to wage a war against the state. Because no one would, if a person values his life more than what he believes, at the risk of losing his life, he will protect his life. But if a person is willing to give his life, then that shows that he is intending to wage a war against the state. Right, you're willfully wanting to undermine the entire state by way of this kufr that you want to announce, that you want to be made known. Otherwise, you would just simply conceal your kufr, flee the land, go to another land, and then announce your kufr openly. Now, as some people do that, they flee the Muslim lands, they end up in some other nation and come out openly. Yes, I am now, you know, whatever. Right, so because you valued your life more than the whatever belief that you had, and you found a way to escape. And but you know what we're saying is, a person who chooses to be a murtad and, you know, wants to remain upon it, and he knows the consequences, he could only be doing that if he has ideological, he wants to he wants to undermine and wage war and to undermine the entire state and everything which it stands upon. Which basically means he wants to call every single Muslim to hellfire.